Welcome to the Chase Down on the Leverage the Chat Network. I'm Justin Rhodes, my co-host Carter Rodriguez. We're running a two-man pod today. Carter, how you doing?
Good. Sometimes it's nice just to have the boys back together, you know, no guests, girls, no guests, just two dudes talking hoop.
Just guys being dudes. I mean, we have an open relationship, but sometimes you got to invest in one another, right?
Yeah, like, honestly, I could feel us distancing from ourselves. Like, you thought I was anti-Marc Gasol in our last pod, which wounded me that you're just like conflating my takes with Mort's.
I think Mort brought up the right point on Twitter. You just kind of agree with whoever's talking, man.
Wait,
I think
that?
It's because you don't have a strong take.
On this one, I don't. you can really sell me on whatever. Like, I'd be cool if they traded for Gasol. I would be, you know, like, if they didn't, that's cool too. I get it. And here, that's where I'm at. Like, and I think it's important because, like, I have such a strong take on literally everything. And, like, to the point where it's problematic, where, like, I had a couple friends who I used to work with text me, like, hey, Carter, you hate the Olympics, right? And I was like, do I? They're like, yeah, you, like, went on this whole thing about it. I was like, I did?
So it's hard to keep inventory on your takes. Is that what you're trying to say?
Functionally, yeah. Like, it was the point where I really had, like, take stock of, like, Carter, you got to, like, be less opinionated about stuff you don't actually care that much about.
Yeah, you're not on a Fox Sports 1 ripoff, a first take or anything like that. So you don't have to have takes on absolutely every subject.
No, that's a real benefit we have. We have them anyway. And we should probably just get right into it, just with the latest Cavs news. Tristan Thompson is coming back on Tuesday night against the Hawks. And he's going to come off the bench. And I know that's something you really didn't want to happen. What was your reaction to that news?
As always, like, I don't think anything is clear cut. It's clear that he was more injured than what was reported. That was one thing he had communicated at practice. It sounded like he had a pretty significant tear. And as Brian Windhorst had explained, he was also nursing that knee injury prior to him going down with the calf strain.
Where did he explain that, Justin?
Oh, he may have explained it on the Chase Down pod.
Yeah, we got one. When we get a big name guest, folks, we're just gonna hammer it for forever. So sorry.
Yeah, we got to milk it for what it's worth. But he mentioned that he had the knee injury, and this kind of makes me think of a couple things. One, I have trepidation over how Tristan will fit with the bench, because that's been their most productive lineup, and they've really gone with Wade surrounded by shooters, space, pace, cutting, and that's worked really well for them. Although on the flip side, not to just rehash that take, because I know we've brought it up on the last few pods, but the other thing I'm kind of thinking is, with Tristan coming in off the bench, it does allow you, if you have to limit his minutes and you have to kind of monitor him as he comes back, it helps you close games if need be with Tristan. It would help you kind of have a little more defense in those later moments. You don't wear him out throughout the course of a game. And I believe it was you that actually mentioned it. And yeah, as you can tell from the tone of my voice, I'm surprised at this great take from you. But if you stagger him and he's not playing tons of minutes with the bench, I think it is something that can work.
Yeah, I think that I think ultimately what you're going to have to do if you're Tyronn Lue is you're going to have to make TT one of your early subs. Probably, so you could run it two ways. You could sub him in for Crowder and use Crowder as kind of the fifth person in those bench lineups, because one thing that's been really interesting with this season is, like, Tyronn Lue's almost platooning. Like, he'll run out Wade, Korver, Fry, and Green together for a lot of minutes. And,
right,
you know, normally you don't see four bench guys on the floor all at once that often. And he'll normally be running them with J.R. Smith at the 2/3 next to Korver. And, you know, they just kind of mix and match there.
Right.
If you sub Tristan in early for Crowder, Crowder can play that role and it actually makes a little bit more sense in those lineups than J.R. does. Because he's a better defender, he's a little bit more active off ball, he's not as good of a shooter, but in a lot of ways, like, Korver, JR, and Fry all on the same floor can be a little duplicative. Like, they kind of do the same thing. So JR is kind of used more as a screener and a secondary creator, where that's probably closer to Jay's strong suit.
I thought Tristan Thompson coming back to the starting lineup would help, because that lineup has struggled so much defensively, even over this 14-1 streak. And at the same time, I really thought that Crowder, who is showing more, like, I think it's clear that he's been more active lately. He's involved. He's cutting off ball. The jumper will kind of come and go in streaks. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can count on him to be like a reliable 39% shooter, but a little similar to what we've dealt with the Mons jumper in the past. But I really thought playing with the bench would suit him well. And it's still possible that we're going to see more of that moving forward. Just because this is how we start games doesn't mean that's what's going to be the case over the 48 minutes. As you pointed out, with the shooters around and with an offense that's more orientated around cutting, I think that really starts to benefit Crowder, and it replicates a lot of what he did in Boston so successfully.
Yeah, I think ultimately you look at kind of how that bench unit tends to run, and they are a lot more movement based. This is something my brother, you know, whenever he calls to talk about the Cavs, he kind of has harped on that issue where, you know, the starters definitely don't move quite as much as those bench units do. And a lot of that's because they don't run as many sets for Korver, and like also like just functionally you don't need to with LeBron. Like, you can run just a spread pick and roll with LeBron, and like those, and the starters are scoring just fine. I think everyone feels that way.
Right.
So, you know, in a lot of ways, you don't really need it. But for Jay Crowder specifically, an offense that revolves more around cutting and off-ball movement, which is kind of what that bench unit just does by the nature of their personnel, he really could fit there. And I think the other concern is that with Tristan off the bench is that you squeeze Channing Frye out a little bit. And, you know,
yeah.
I get that that's a concern, and it's one that I've voiced in the past, but I think the only way you can really get around that is going super big and playing Tristan a little bit at the power forward, which isn't a disaster if you play him with Frye.
It's going to be really interesting, because the complexion of this team is going to change pretty dramatically, like, this week. I think Tristan's coming back on Tuesday. Isaiah Thomas may be back by the end of the week. And I want to get your thoughts on this. Like, I'm with you on Channing Frye losing minutes kind of being a little disappointing. I don't know necessarily how many he's going to lose. With the team getting healthy, I think Crowder's minutes will go down a little bit. Frye's going to lose a couple. I think the guy that's going to lose the most minutes, though, is J.R. Smith. Like, I think Kyle Korver is going to play less minutes at small forward and primarily serve as the team's backup shooting guard just because of the front court depth that they have.
Sure.
One thing that I would be interested in is if, as you said, if Tristan's the early sub, I wouldn't necessarily hate subbing out Kevin Love a little early. And having Tristan run with Jay Crowder and LeBron, and you have a versatile, more defensive-orientated lineup there. And then with the bench, all of a sudden you can have Kevin Love working with those guys, either with or without Channing Frye. If Jay Crowder is playing minutes with the bench as well, like with it being staggered, he can kind of act off of him the same way that he did off Al Horford in Boston, and you can kind of stagger it that Crowder, Love, and Thomas are playing together to replicate those looks. I think that would be one interesting thing to see. This is really the first time in Tyronn Lue's tenure with the team that there's actually a lot of different options that he has with this personnel.
Arguably too many. There are guys that are going to be really unhappy with where their role in the offense goes. Like, I think there's real concern that Jeff Green's minutes are going to drop quite a bit in this new scenario. And that's a bummer because he's really earned them.
Mm-hmm.
He's played great, but, you know, the alternative is really cutting Crowder even further, which I don't think they're very interested in doing. And, you know, I did want to talk about Crowder because both of us have been, you know, I think appropriately hard on him for the quality of play he's provided this year, which, you know, it's been very inconsistent. But you can really feel this team rallying around him. And, you know, we know that his mom, you know, unfortunately passed away the day he got traded. He got dropped in a new situation for a guy who's clearly very dependent on comfort. Like, he can't, like, he's not just a drop in and plug in and play guy. And it does feel like the team is really rallying around him in a way that I think is very encouraging. And in a lot of ways, like our friend Damon Rangula has discussed, like this guy's just like, LeBron's such a good leader.
Yeah. Oh, no, he absolutely knows how to rally the troops. And to be clear, like, Jay Crowder, I don't really have an issue necessarily with how he's playing. Like, it was clear that there was a transition period where he just didn't know where to be, but he still competes. And I think, like, the frustrating thing with, let's say, Amon Shumpert in the past is you got really inconsistent effort from him and inconsistent attention to detail on defense, things like that. With Jay Crowder, you don't necessarily get that. You don't get Jay Crowder all of a sudden isolating for 15 seconds with the ball in his hands, trying to break someone down off the dribble and jacking up a bad shot. Like, him missing open shots in the flow of the offense, those are just shots he has to take. And I don't necessarily have an issue with any of the shots he is taking. And as I mentioned before, he is competing harder on the defensive end. I guess my biggest kind of frustrations are more, I don't know if they're even frustrations. It's just more observations with the lineups. Like, when you see other teams put their center on him routinely, and then the center just stays in the paint the whole time. Because they know if they close out late, Crowder's not going to be able to blow by them. And that's fine. That's just one of his limitations as a player. But that really negates the effect of having all these shooters around, because he's not creating the spacing that you'd think. Or the spacing that would be created if you had a traditional center in there that, like Tristan Thompson, that can go out and set solid screens, initiate the pick and roll, and force that center to be drawn out of the paint. So there is some frustration over just the lack of it and not working out as well as it could have. But I don't think it's something to necessarily get too down over. Like, I think he's still a valuable contributor on this team.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, like, you wanted to see him finish a little better at the rim. I think that's where the biggest disappointment has been. Like, I think we knew that jumper was going to be a little inconsistent, but we didn't expect, like, 35% field goal shooting or whatever he's at. And a lot of that, you know, and in a lot of ways, like, I've heard some people kind of suggest, like, oh, maybe they need to, you know, drop him out of the, you know, lower in the rotation. It's like, no, you can't do that, because, and this is something that I had talked about with Mort on the pod fairly recently, and it was like, you can't do that. You have to let him work through it in the same way you have to let JR work through his stuff, because you need those guys when it really matters, and you can't replace them with Jeff Green when it matters. Like, Jeff Green might help, but he's not going to be as good as the best version of Jay Crowder. Kyle Korver may be really good, but he's not going to be as helpful against the Warriors as the best version of J.R. Smith.
Right.
So,
JR's been more disappointing than Crowder, because JR is, like, he's passing up wide open shots, and that's scary, because so much of what he's kind of built his career on is being a confident rhythm shooter, streak shooter, and when he's not taking those shots, it's scary. It's like, I don't even know who that is on the court. Come on, it's Mr. Shooter Shoot.
Yeah, I will say, the numbers are coming up for him. He was just brutal from three for the first, like, 10 games. He's up to 36% from three, which is, you know, it's not ideal, but he's still taking 5.5 a game. Like, he's starting to get them up with a little more consistency. I think he kind of had to work through being mad that he got benched to start the year for Wade. And he is settling in a little. Defensively, he's still been pretty bad, and we saw Victor Oladipo absolutely cook his ass for, you know, 40 minutes. But also, it's worth noting he's playing way too many minutes. This year, he's playing 31 a game. And, like, that's not really, like, where you want your specialist starters to be at, especially on a team that can go 10 deep. So I think when we're looking at how the rotation's going to change once Thompson and Thomas come back is I think JR is really the guy you're going to, you really should see go from 31 minutes a game down to maybe 25.
Right. And that opens up a lot. Like, as I said, if Fry loses, like, let's say 3 or 4 minutes a game that he would play, like, you're not going to see any 20-minute nights from him anymore, but you may see more 10-minute nights. And JR's minutes get cut by 6. And Crowder maybe loses 2 or 3, and Jeff Green loses 2 or 3. All of a sudden, if Korver's playing more minutes at shooting guard and Tristan Thompson comes in at about 25 minutes a game to help keep him fresh, I think you can still keep these guys in the rotation and still kind of play it by ear based on what the opposing team looks like, what works against them. And some guys, some nights, just will have to understand that this isn't their night, this isn't the best matchup for them, and other nights it will be.
This is the sacrifice of being on a championship quality, championship contending team. I just wrote a big piece for Fear the Sword about how the Cavs don't have room for Derrick Rose anymore. And I kind of, you know, and at one point I kind of said, listen, it's not fair that Rose is going to be, that Rose should be out of the rotation. He never really got a chance to play the role that he was signed to play. And that sucks. You know, he was supposed to be the spark plug off the bench, and now that role has been filled by Dwayne Wade. And that sucks. But, you know, that is life on a championship contending team. Like, look at Richard Jefferson, who was a perfect citizen, played way better than he had any right to have played, and like, wasn't that expensive, was a good team, good locker room presence, well-liked, and he got traded this summer to make room for someone who might be a marginal upgrade. Look at JR, who got benched and unbenched. Look at Channing Frye, who has contributed every second he's gotten to play, and yet his rotation spot is in question once the team gets healthy. Like, it's not always fair, and like, the way the rotation plays out isn't designed to maximize the individual players. It's kind of just what the team needs. And that's, you know, you hear about the disease of more, and you hear about like the sacrifices great teams have to make. This is one of them. And guys like JR are going to have to take minute cuts. Guys like Jeff Green, who I feel really bad because that guy does not deserve to have his minutes cut at all, but they're going to be. And
yeah, to some extent, I think Tyronn Lue historically has been someone that will play guys when they're playing well. So I think as long as this production keeps up, he's going to see consistent minutes. Like, even Derek Williams last year, when he was on a hot streak, played a fair amount of minutes. But before we move away from Rose, like, it just kind of goes to show, like, you're on a veteran minimum contract. You're not guaranteed a chance to prove yourself and to earn a roster spot when you're on that type of deal.
No.
I have a conspiracy theory.
Oh, you know I love those.
I think Rose is not going to return to the active lineup this season, and he has an agreement with the Cavs to basically rehab this injury and not lose his Adidas contract.
That's an interesting theory. I mean, I don't know, man. I think he wants to play.
Like, well, they'll buy him out in like February or something like that.
That feels very possible. And in a lot of ways, like, someone, you know, might say, listen, you'd rather have Derrick Rose than Jose Calderon, which, even though that's probably not true at this point for this team, at least.
Nope.
And a lot of teams, that's not true. I think it's fair to say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's solely based on this situation, because the Cavs just don't need another ball-dominant player at this
point.
But
even if it
was... Especially when Isaiah Thomas is back.
Yeah, but even if it was true, like, part of, like, being a good organization is, like, giving guys the opportunity to play when they deserve to and when they don't factor into your future plans. And, like, if Derrick Rose comes to them in February and says, guys, I want to buy out. Like, I want to play, like... I mean, I think about, like, Mark Cuban letting Richard Jefferson out of his deal after DeAndre reneged, because it's like, well, that's not what you signed up for, so we'll let you out. Like, good organizations aren't always self-thinking. Like, you have to kind of take care of guys. And this is one where I just think it's very likely that he doesn't finish the season on this team once he's healthy.
I agree. And some bad organizations do that too. Like, shout out to the Chicago Bulls of buying out Wade quicker than a lot of people anticipated.
Respect. Thank you.
Are the Cavs going to buy out Rose for Vince Carter?
Oh, man. That would make you so
unhappy. He's so washed this year, and yeah. It makes me sad.
Well, in fairness, like, same thing with the Orlando Magic principle. I think the Sacramento Kings principle applies as well. Like, what is his motivation to play well?
Yeah, that's true. There's a post-Magic bump. There's a post-Westbrook bump, and there'll likely be a post-Kings bump.
Yep. So if he wants to come for free and Dan Gilbert's willing to pay, I'd take a flyer. Like, I'd rather have him out there in the finals than Shump. If, like, things go wrong.
Did Vince play on Memphis?
Yeah, like, the last, like 2 years.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he was, like, really unbelievably good for them.
That's right. We'll reunite him with Marc Gasol. This will work perfectly.
Yeah.
Matt Moore never should have done that to me. And like, his subsequent tweets, like, he was talking to a couple of Raptors bloggers. I believe it was William Liu. Shout out to William Liu. But William Liu had posted, like, a fake trade where it was, like, Jonas, Norman Powell, and, like, the DeLon Wright and the Raptors pick or something like that. And Matt Moore was like, nah, you probably wouldn't need to include a pick into that. And I'm like, really? His value is that low? Because, like, this summer, Masai Ujiri basically came out and said that the only offers on the table for Valanciunas were if the Raptors would include a pick just for a team to eat a salary. Yeah, just to dump him. So if that's what we're talking about as a market for Marc Gasol, one, I understand Memphis being hesitant to move him. Two, holy crap, I want Marc Gasol without giving up the Brooklyn pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the easy thing to want, even if certain Fear the Sword Twitter account runners don't want to do that. By the way, Grizzlies currently down 15 to the Heat in the fourth quarter at home. It's so ugly.
Man.
It's so ugly. Actually, it's a really good day for it's a good night. We're recording on Monday night. Great night for, like, Cavs fans being hating-ass haters.
Oh, I see OKC's down 14, too, with
OKC's,
3.5 minutes.
OKC's getting their shit packed by Charlotte, who is right with Brooklyn in the tank race. And then
was just about to say that.
And then your Boston Celtics down 29 to the Bulls.
They're my Boston Celtics, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No, now they're down 30. They're down 30 with 1.5 minutes to go. Al Horford has 4 rebounds. Is tonight the night that I retweet Anna Horford slandering me for criticizing Horford's rebounding?
That's probably fair. It's worth noting that even when we win, I lose because I bet Celtics second half like an idiot. And they got their shit packed in the fourth quarter by 15 points. But if you're a Cavs fan, that's great. This is such a bad loss for the Thunder to get destroyed at home with Paul George back in the lineup. I mean, that team is just so, like, every time you think they're starting to figure it out, and they benched Andre Roberson today, by the way. I don't know if you saw that. They put Alex Abrines in the starting lineup over Roberson. Actually, I don't think Roberson's playing. He might just be hurt. Sorry. Mm-hmm. He's not playing today. I'm a liar. Point is, George is back, and every time you think that this team is kind of figuring it out, they blow, like, an awful game. And, like,
right.
They're 12-13 right now, about to be 12-14. They lost to Brooklyn. They beat Memphis by 1 point in overtime. They beat a skeleton crew Spurs team by 3. This team might just be broken. I guess my whole thing with them is all the metrics still indicate they're, like, a good team, even though that's starting to dip a little bit just as they keep being mediocre and losing games. But, like, at what point are they just going to, like, break mentally?
They might be there already.
It's
Do you think Paul George likes being a spot-up shooter?
No. And you know what's funny? I actually was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about, like, at first I was like, man, you know, what if like a lot of these same problems like happen on the Cavs too, where they don't have a ton of ball movement? And then I thought, the Cavs move the ball 500% better than the Thunder, and that is not good to say about the Thunder.
No, the Thunder move the ball if it's going to go into the hands of a spot-up shooter. Mm-hmm. The Cavs actually probe the defense. They swing it around. As I said, as much as I don't like JR passing up open shots, often it does lead to another good shot. I mean, it's just a completely different mindset. LeBron plays with a different mindset than Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, that's the real difference is LeBron's pulling the strings on one end and Russ is pulling them on the other. And like, you cannot think there's such a huge difference in the quality mm-hmm. of like team play, even if like, you know, because people like to like give LeBron shit for like dominating the ball too much and like, you know, kind of like stifling his teammates to some extent, like in terms of like their creativity with the ball. Like, he's great with spot up shooters, but like, come on, like, it's so different than OKC. OKC is 3-10 on the road. They're about to go to 12-14 on the season, and they've just got a 3-game road trip coming up.
Mm-hmm.
At Indy, at Philly, and I believe at New York, so that's probably a win. But the point is, this is not like easy. Like, they could lose all three of those games without a doubt. And like, I don't know. I think the fact that Wendy is talking about how the Cavs are going to keep their powder dry until the OKC situation plays itself out, to me, that tells me that they think there's a real chance at this. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, for now, I'm just going to pretend it's a pipe dream. But like, the uglier it gets, the more like logic will dictate that Presti flips George.
Right, because he's not going to get burned twice. And like, his behavior almost at all points has been, I'm going to move a guy before I lose him for nothing. Like, that's what happened to James Harden. That's what happened to Serge Ibaka. Kevin Durant was the one exception, and I don't think he's going to make that same mistake.
I mean, the thing that's keeping them in it is how bad the West is, which is funny to say. But like, like they are about to be 9 games back of the 1 seed. They're about to be like, I think they'll be a half game out of the 8 seed, 2 games out of the 5 seed. Like, it's really not that far off. And like, but I don't know, man. It's just really messy there. And I did want to talk about the Brooklyn pick, because I was tweeting up a storm because everyone's so interested in the idea that Brooklyn's really good this year. And maybe they're better than we think, right? Like, that's very possible. They're 10-15, which is...
They're already better than I thought they would be, because they can survive countless injuries.
Yeah, and that's sorry to cut you off, but that's what drives me effing crazy about the whole reaction to Brooklyn being better is, like, all these Boston people are like, see, we told you they'd be pretty good. It's like, screw off. You thought they'd be good because they added D'Angelo Russell. Like,
yeah, none of the reasons you thought that they were going to be good are there. Jeremy Lin went down in game one. D'Angelo Russell's had knee surgery. Spencer Dinwiddie has been better than Russell, and they'd likely be worse if he was playing.
Yeah.
And for an offense that is completely based around getting out, running, playing insanely fast, and shooting a ton of threes, they're going to add Okafor, who is like, I don't know, that's like having a crew of motorcycles try to keep up pace with a tank. Like, he's just going to walk up and down the floor, demand post-ups, and that's going to be it.
Yeah.
Like, it was a smart gamble long term for them. But one, Trevor Booker is a good player, a better player than Okafor this year. Okafor doesn't necessarily fit the system, and there's a very high possibility that he's going to be bad.
Yeah, and I think, like, in a lot of ways, I think that the month of December is going to be really informative for how good this team is. If they keep, I mean, and like, we have to give credit where it's due, is they've really scrapped in almost every game. Like, they don't get blown out a ton for the most part. Like, when they lose, it's by 8 to 10 points. And when they win, it's, you know, they don't blow teams out a lot, but they don't, like, it's not like a bunch of nail biters every time. So they've been better than we think, but I think they've had the fifth easiest schedule in the NBA so far. And they just made a forward-facing move that's probably going to make them worse in the short term. So I want to see how they get through this December. And I also think it's worth noting, like, and I mentioned this, a lot of people are like, oh, the Nets are only, they're 2.5 games out of the 8 seed right now, which is all well and good and very impressive. And I think we should give credit where it's due. But right now, they are 4.5 games out of the worst record in the NBA.
Right.
Four and a half.
No, it's
still not
really early. Yeah. It's not a ton. And at some point, like once they're a little further out of the playoff race, these are still humans. And when they're not playing for anything, they're going to be less and less motivated as the season goes on.
Sure. And I think the Lakers are going to move ahead of them. I think the Clippers, once Blake gets back, should leapfrog. I think, you know who's actually not as bad as people think, and I'm crazy for saying it maybe, is the Mavericks. I think that team is really competitive on a night-to-night basis. And like, there's just a lot of teams that like very well could jump the Nets in the rankings. Now, maybe the Nets just stay solid, which, you know what? Bummer. I guess the Cavs will get the 8th pick, which sucks. My question to you is, how much more willing are you to move that asset on a lesser piece if at the deadline time, it's about 60 days away now, how willing are you to move that on a lesser piece if the Nets pick is looking like it's going to stay in the 8, 7, 8, 9 range?
My thing is, like, I'm willing to move that pick if a player that's worthwhile comes on the market. Like, if it's someone that's going to actually help the Cavs against the Warriors, I think it's worth doing. But that has to be like a starting caliber player. I don't want that to be just another rotation player or a couple depth pieces or anything like that, because the Cavs have depth.
Yeah, they do. So, that's a real luxury they have.
Right. And that also helps them make a potential trade offer if they're consolidating talent and making it kind of sweetening the offer with the pick.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if a player is available, then you move it. If not, I'm fine with keeping it. At the end of the day, it sucks that you don't get
DeAndre Ayton.
A higher chance. Yeah, it sucks that you don't get a higher chance at adding a generational talent. But at the end of the day, you still have the possibility to add a top 10 player to a very old team, and they need young legs. There's still guys outside of the top 10 that can make an impact. We see it every year that players pick later on, end up blossoming. I mean, obviously, this is me trying to console myself to some extent and talk myself into being this being better. And at the end of the day, it is still a lottery, and you're going to have a chance at winning that. And that's one thing the Cavs are good at. But at the end of the day, like, it's still adding young talent, and that pick could be flipped at the deadline. I mean, look what it took to get Jimmy Butler out of Chicago on draft night. Like,
not much.
That was a later first, a torn ACL, and a bucket of a bag full of basketballs. Like, it really wasn't a lot. You never know what's going to be available. So I wouldn't rule anything out.
Yeah, I think a lot of it that I think people from an outsider perspective might think that the preference would be for the Cavs to trade the pick for just any help, whether it's like let's say it's like I don't even want to say Avery Bradley because he's probably too good. Like a above average starter.
Okay.
Because the pick's not as good, but what they're kind of missing is that this isn't the same Cavs teams that we've normally seen at the deadlines that have these massive holes that really need help or need a certain kind of player. Like, what kind of...
I also want names.
Yeah.
I want names. I'm sick of people jumping in the mentions being like, oh, they need to add a rim protector that can shoot threes and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, I want to know who this player is. Where is he available? Like, I just haven't seen a compelling name really come up.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. And, like, the names that are compelling are the ones that are so good that the Cavs can consolidate talent, where they have a 2-for-1 for a really, really good player and include the pick. And I haven't really seen a lot of those. So for now, the Cavs like have this weird luxury. I still think if we hit deadline day and the and no superstar like Paul George has become available for the Brooklyn pick, I think they'll trade their own pick just for extra insurance. And because they're,
I think so too.
And I think a big factor there is you do have a lot of guys in expiring deals. You have Wade, who is on a 1 year. You've got Jeff Green, who's on a 1 year. Isaiah Thomas is on a 1 year. So if you get like a really solid point guard stopgap just in case, cool. But I don't really see them. I think the reason I see them doing that is I don't see them taking two rookies in the first round next year.
Right. That seems probably going to be a sign and trade for Chris Paul on draft night or something like that.
You're a monster.
I am a monster, but man, would I burst into like a cloud of petty, like pure energy of petty, if all the LeBron joining Paul talk ended up taking place in Cleveland rather than Houston.
Yeah, that article, man.
And there would still be people on Cavs Twitter complaining about it the same way that they're complaining about theoretically adding fucking Marc Gasol for Tristan Thompson and the Cavs pick.
Yeah, I mean,
and I love Tristan.
Yeah,
like,
you do.
That's my guy. That's my Canadian guy. Ugh. Like, it's Marc Gasol. We're still talking about a top three center in the league.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I understand the skepticism, and I understand, I guess, what it means if you're saying that you don't want to make that trade is, one, you are very sure Tristan is going to get back to what he was at, and you are very sure you don't want to lock up the Brooklyn pick by trading your own pick this year, though you can get creative. You can trade your 2021 with protections, and a forward-thinking front office would probably prefer the Cavs' 2021 pick to their 2018 pick.
Right.
And then you also think Marc Gasol is on the precipice. Like, if you think Marc Gasol is a year away from being worthless, which happens, let's not pretend it doesn't happen, then you don't want to do that deal. And that's why I kind of understand is, like, it all depends on your internal evaluation of Marc Gasol. If you don't think much of him, then you're not going to think much of the idea of trading Tristan and a pick for him.
Listen, he just needs to not become worthless before LeBron resigns.
That's a great point. Like, that's why I'm ultimately okay with the idea of it, especially if it's just a Cavs own pick, not the Brooklyn pick, is like, LeBron's going to see that and like be like, damn, this team's pretty good. We got names all over the place, even though he probably hates Marc Gasol forever now for aspiring Fizz.
It's something he can bond with him over.
Coach Killer Central, and I appreciate it.
Listen, man, he's a trailblazer. He's the first white Coach Killer.
I really think we didn't... Like, I don't think people celebrated that enough. That's hilarious.
That's a landmark.
Holy shit, did Houston beat New Orleans? New Orleans was up by, like, 20 points. Yep, they did.
Yeah, I saw some response to James Harden doing the thing.
Houston is terrifying. They're so good. I haven't seen them be this good in a long time. Harden had 26 and 17.
They are clearly, like, if not the top team, then the second best team in the league right now. Luckily, we only have to play one of those two teams.
It's very nice. It's a very encouraging thing. How many games does that series go? Houston, Golden State.
Is Chris Paul going to stay healthy?
Yes, both teams
for the first time ever.
Both teams at 100% health.
Are James Harden and Chris Paul going to take a shit on the floor, slip on that shit, and then do snow angels in that shit?
That's for you to decide.
In the first two rounds.
That's for you to decide. If they make it to the conference finals, how many games does that series go? Because I think we're both picking Warriors, no question.
Right. I think it goes six.
That's pretty impressive.
I think that Houston team's really goddamn good.
Once a series goes six, that just basically means that you think either team could win. Like, if you're willing to say that, is like saying, like, hey, if a few things break, the other one would win. Like,
I think that there is absolutely a chance that they could upset them. I still think this Warriors team is the best team that's been put together. But, I mean, for the first time, like, Steph re-injured the problematic ankle there. Kevin Durant. I mean, it's kind of funny, and like the sick part of my brain, which is about 80% of it, really loves like all these comments from Durant about how even after winning a title, it didn't feel as good as he thought it would, and he doesn't really feel fulfilled there. And like, there, it's just all the groundwork for this indecisive KD that has kind of been the persona that he's known for. And like, like, part of me is just wondering if halfway through that series, Chris Paul and James Harden just start texting KD being like, hey, you are a free agent this summer, man.
just torch his ass.
Yeah. And then Houston's going to blow a lead in the finals to the Cavs, and Harden's going to call KD crying from the parking lot, and then all of a sudden you got your new super team that ruined the league.
Yep. But the Cavs will have another title at the end of that hypothetical, so that's cool with me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the Rockets would be favored over the Cavs?
I think until I see, one, what Tristan Thompson we get, two, what Isaiah Thomas we get, I'm giving the Rockets the benefit of the doubt right now. That's why I'm saying that they are either the best or second best team right now, because I don't know what this Cavs team is going to look like when they're fully healthy. Yes, they still have LeBron, and LeBron gives you a chance to win every series that you're in, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are the best team. Like, I think if you give LeBron a 30% chance to win, he's going to win it more than 30% of the time.
No, that's a good way to frame it.
But yeah, until I see what this team is when they're fully healthy, it's really hard for me to give them the benefit of the doubt over the Rockets right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But it's funny because the Rockets also like haven't earned the benefit of the doubt because Harden lost his mind last year.
Right, and as much as I like to joke about the choking, I don't think Chris Paul's necessarily a choker.
I don't think Paul is either. But Harden specifically was a disaster. You can't.
Yeah, Harden's had some weird moments. Like Harden last year was as bad as I've seen since LeBron
shut down in the corner
Boston
against the
in 2010. Yeah. And just started shooting with his left hand out of boredom. Like, I've never seen anything like that. If he retired after that series, it wouldn't surprise me. It'd be like, oh, he had something going on. That was messed up. But, like, that was a really good team last year. And I know at the start of the year, when people are talking about the MVP races or whatever, they're like, oh, well, even though LeBron was playing without Tristan Thompson, without Isaiah Thomas, like, Harden was going without Chris Paul. I'm like, okay, they traded their backup point guard and, like, filler for Chris Paul, and they still added PJ Tucker. They still added Luke Richard and Mba Mute. Like, that was already a really good team that added more pieces than they had last season before Chris Paul came back.
They're filthy.
So and Harden was still playing in the exact same role that he was the year before, whereas LeBron had to do almost everything because they just didn't have any guys that could dribble and also pass the ball. I mean, Derrick Rose can dribble, but he was like a missile solely focused on the rim every time he touched it. So I don't think that's necessarily an argument that goes in Harden's favor. But yeah, I just think that's a really improved team. PJ Tucker is a legitimately good role player. I think he can transform lineups defensively with what he can do. So I mean, the Rockets are getting it done on both ends of the court. They're deeper than they were. And Harden and Paul are just going to make things easier and easier for each other. So I'm not necessarily counting on them choking the same way that you would expect in the past.
No, and honestly, like, they're just so good, and they've really figured out how to balance the dueling banjos. And they're scary. They're genuinely scary, but we should probably get back on Cavs talk. Sorry for the diversion, but I was blown away because they're just getting their asses kicked the whole game. And Drew Holiday,
it's still Cavs talk.
Drew Holiday and Etuan Moore combined for 63 points, 73 points, and they lost.
Jesus,
that's crazy. Rajon Rondo had a triple double. Boogie had 24, 14, and 8. They lost. That sucks. Hey, Chase Down listeners, listen up. The Cavaliers may not care about the regular season, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other guys. On Draft, you play in real life snake drafts with other people, just like in your season long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night and there's no management. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part? You can play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start at just $1, so you don't have to be Dan Gilbert if you want to buy your way in. There's no salary caps, and you can play in a real live snake draft, just like the one you play in with your friends in a season-long league. Come and join me on Draft today. Download the app at any time. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes. Or you can play right from your computer on draft.com. Whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But if you want that, you're going to have to use our promo code, THECHASEDOWN. That's THECHASEDOWN, one word. That's right, you can play a real money game for free just for using our promo code, THECHASEDOWN, one word, on your first deposit on Draft. Newest segment, our favorite Cavs take of the week.
And you, Carter?
I'll start. TheRinger.com, notable bastion of Boston propaganda. But actually, one of my favorite writers on that site, Jonathan Charks, had a take, kind of wrote about LeBron going to the aforementioned Houston Rockets. So it's actually kind of a natural transition. And
it was a natural transition until you blew the segue.
Well, you know, here we are. I'll just read the take. In all likelihood, LeBron is headed for his third finals loss in 4 years to Golden State. Fair. Warriors versus Cavs could have been this generation's version of Lakers versus Celtics, but LeBron never had the supporting cast to make it a fair fight. He needed a superhuman performance to beat the Warriors once in 2016. And they didn't even have Durant then. He averaged 33, 12, and 10 in last year's finals, and LeBron and Cleveland still lost in five games. Whoa. Hold on here. And once again, big fan of Jonathan Chark's writing, but whoa. First off, didn't even mention the first year when James Jones had to play 30 minutes a game because Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love were hurt. Then the second year, which... for some reason, he pretends they didn't win, which they did. They won.
I'm pretty sure the Cavs won the title.
The title. So, yeah, it's okay. Cool that he had a superhuman performance. That's how, like, titles are supposed to work. Like when I read that...
He had a superhuman performance, but he also had a teammate that was scoring over 30 points per game.
Yeah, like, when I read that line, it just, like, reminded me of how much the Warriors, like, have warped the league. Like, no, like... in order to win titles, your best player is supposed to have to go gangbusters. That's how titles work. It's hard. Like, you're not supposed to...
No. The way you win titles is by having a team so loaded with talent that you can just kind of cruise, and none of your baskets actually have that much pressure on them because you know your margin for error is the size of the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, like, I couldn't believe that. Like, it's just like... no, like, every title up until last... and even then, Durant went gangbusters. It's just like they might have been able to do it without it, but, like, he still did it. And, like, so to pretend like it's... like, it was, like, some fluke is insane. And then, the next year, the most talented team ever came together. So, of the 3 years he mentioned, 1 year that he didn't mention at all, they had no chance because of injuries, which are completely out of people's control. The second year, they won, and then the third year, Durant came. Like, what drove me crazy about that take is that the Rockets would be better than this year's Cavs if they added LeBron. Duh.
Right.
But, like, why would you pretend like the Cavs haven't put a good roster around?
There's quite a few teams that would be better than the Cavs if you added LeBron.
Yeah, if you just because they don't already have LeBron. Because right. That's a salary cap constraint, believe it or not. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the Celtics would be better than LeBron because, like, that's just adding LeBron. Like, that's super helpful.
One thing I think people forget is LeBron and Chris Paul are heads of the Players Union. And there is no way, given that position that they're in, that they can all of a sudden sign these like little discount deals. Like, LeBron's not signing for $15 million and Chris Paul isn't doing the same. Like, the Rockets would need to gut their existing team in order to make that possible, which, I mean, would be worthwhile, and you can find guys that are going to join for cheap. But you can't all of a sudden, like, say, oh, that existing team that they have, just add LeBron. Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah, it was insane. And, like, I just couldn't believe it. And just to pretend like this supporting cast, like some of these, like I remember, and like even the Ringer's head, Bill Simmons, like he says, he's talked about on his pod that like he liked watching the finals, even though the games weren't super close, because like the quality of play was just so insanely high on both sides.
Right. Like, man, if only the Cavs hit some goddamn open shots in those first two games.
But like it or not. And I know people aren't going to like this take because the Cavs underperformed in the regular seasons, but these are some of the best teams of all time, these Cavs teams. Maybe not like the top five teams, but they're like upper 85-90%. You don't get to three straight finals unless you're really effing good. And like to pretend like they weren't,
that's fair to say.
Or that they were just LeBron, like manifestations of LeBron, is like so disrespectful to how good Love has been, and so disrespectful to how good Kyrie has been. I couldn't believe it. So that's my take.
Do you think he got like attacked at the Ringer office for not giving enough love to Kyrie?
Yes, I think he should have. The only time the Ringer office has been justified in their Kyrie standing. But go ahead with your take, because yours can actually lead us into a conversation.
Oh, well, I've actually kind of pivoted. I've got a couple takes because I don't play by rules.
Oh, wow.
One, because you mentioned Bill Simmons' name, it reminded me that in the year of our Lord 2017, Bill Simmons suggested that the Cavs should trade Tristan Thompson for Devin Harris.
Yeah, what the fuck was that? Sorry. I didn't even want to...
That's a what the fuck.
I didn't even want to screen grab it and tweet it out because I was so offended.
I had to double check that he was still in the league.
Does
one-time All-Star Devin Harris, though.
Does Bill Simmons think that by shedding Tristan Thompson's salary that they would be under the cap?
He might.
Because that's the only way you... Because I get that idea, like, oh, yeah, if they shed Tristan, then they can go sign Chris Paul this summer, but they can't. So what the fuck are you talking about?
Like, what theoretical role would he be playing?
Well, I think he just treated it like a straight salary dump. It was the most nonsense thing. And, like, there's definitely no way he puts his stuff to hit an editor. That was insane. Anyway, sorry.
Man, shout out to editors for making me look literate.
Yeah.
It's helpful. My other thing, I don't know if this is necessarily a take, but it was my favorite thing to come out of the last week. Was the aggregation of LeBron wants to team up with Nerlens Noel in L.A.
The new super team.
I love Rich Paul. Like, he's playing Magic Johnson like a fiddle. They are creating a market for Noel, and if the Lakers give him a big contract, I'm just going to, like, oh... It's going to make my heart so warm. My cold, cold, dead heart is going to heat up.
Yeah. It's what's so disheartening about a lot of the way the NBA is covered by our journalistic friends and NBA Twitter at large is, like, guys, we see what's going on here. How don't you? We're so dumb.
I don't think they get... I don't think they get the ability, like they don't have the ability to just throw these baseless accusations out there. Like if someone tweeted like, oh, this is obviously a ploy by Rich Paul, like someone's getting a call.
Yeah, I get that. But like, it's more like, I guess like, and this isn't fair because I'm like asking like your lay NBA fan to like pay more attention than this. But like, do they think LeBron just is like letting it slip? Like,
well,
like he was just LeBron, hanging out with the reporter, like the reporter was just hanging out near LeBron at the bar. He's like, and LeBron just turned to his buddy and was like, I'm going to team up with Nerland soon. No, like think about like how information is spread in the NBA. Guys always have a motive.
Can we also address, like, everyone likes to talk about like players LeBron has endorsed or whatever. How few of those has he actually played with, though? Like, everyone assumes that his endorsement of Shabazz Napier was actually legitimate. He fully intended on leaving at that point. Like, has anyone considered the possibility that he was trying to screw Pat Riley?
Of course not. It's, like, LeBron is the most... It's so funny that we can think LeBron, on one hand, is the most cerebral athlete we've ever seen that like really cares about controlling the message and is this petty manipulative guy, if you want to frame it negatively, but then also is just like accidentally letting news slip that he's planning on teaming up with Nerlens Noel in LA. Like, how stupid is that? Like, you have to think about this stuff. And like,
it's fantastic.
Let's just say I think we can confirm that LeBron James is not making free agency decisions based on Nerlens effing I can't get off the bench in Dallas because Rick Carlisle hates me, Noel.
Man, it's just, it makes me so happy. Like LeBron, as you said, there's two LeBrons. There's the cerebral, sees the game like seven plays before it happens kind of guy. And then there's the corny dad that's just the most petty human being on earth. And like... There's a time and a place for both, and I enjoy both almost equally.
Sure do. They're the best. But do you have any more takes?
I guess shout out to Kelly Scaletta today, who went bold saying that he doesn't even see a case for LeBron to be the MVP. I personally have James Harden as my front runner, but when you go this overboard and say that, oh, there's no case to be made, you open yourself up to a little bit of criticism, especially when you cite on-off numbers.
I don't know, man. Like, what's so crazy to me, because people did this with last year too, is like, I don't see the case for Russ. And like, even like you, who is a Russ hater, like you get the logic.
Yeah, no, like, I'm as biased as he gets in that situation, but I understood where it's coming from. I may think that a lot of that was phony, but, like, I get it.
There's a clear and present case for LeBron to be MVP, if you so choose. And
he's pretty good at basketball.
I don't know if he is, but, like maybe the case is the guy we all agree is the best player in the world is having his best offensive season of all time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good reason. Just a thought.
Yep.
That's a good case.
And as funny as it is, and like as terrible as it is to say out loud, let's not act like there aren't lifetime achievement MVPs given out. Like, even if LeBron has dropped off defensively, which he has, if he has the best offensive season of his career, and the Cavs end up overtaking the Celtics. Like, if they catch the Celtics and they get the top seed in the East and LeBron continues this insane efficiency, it's going to be really hard to convince a lot of those voters to not vote for him, especially because, as unfair as it is, Harden's history of kind of collapsing at times leaves people with a sour taste in their mouth. Like, they were looking for a reason to give it to LeBron last year, and then he kind of took himself out of the race with how he closed out the season.
Yeah.
So what you do at the end of the year probably weighs on the voting a little more than it should. But if they finish strong, and like if this team goes on another run after they add Isaiah Thomas and they get healthy here, it's going to be hard to convince voters to not vote for LeBron.
Yeah, I think like, I think if it's close, the lifetime achievement thing is a really nice tiebreaker in favor of LeBron.
And if Houston's like 12 games ahead of them in the standings, like,
then that's just not Harden's gonna
then win. You have to give it to him.
It's funny. I forget who kind of made the point. Like, there's almost voter fatigue with Harden, even though he hasn't won it, which is so unfair. But there
it's
is a
hilarious
little bit.
Though.
But there
it's
is
so
like
real.
That. I don't think that's like completely insane either.
Yeah, that's a better way to frame what I was trying to say.
But you know, I guess we'll wait and see. I'm at the point, which is kind of nice, is like as a fan, I just don't really care if LeBron wins MVP anymore. I don't think that really changes his legacy much in the way that, like, I know, like, if you're interested in LeBron's legacy, you should be much more invested in them winning the title this year than
hashtag rings.
Yeah, like he needs, and like, it's not about just hashtag rings. I think the idea, if you're looking at LeBron's legacy, beating the most talented team ever assembled is one hell of a notch to put in your belt.
Right, that's the whole thing, because he's not going to have the perfect record that MJ had in the finals, but like, this is the obstacle. Like, this was a higher bar that has been created. This, like, seemingly impossible odds. I mean, if you take down this team, especially after losing Kyrie, like...
Yeah, that would be crazy. It would be so crazy.
If they win this year...
Which is why
year,
it's not
like,
going to happen, but it would be crazy.
Man, if they win this year, I'm not even going to know what to do with myself.
Yeah, it would be bonkers, which is fine, because it's not going to happen. They're probably not going to win this year. But
right, yeah.
But that's okay.
I don't have to prep for that, but I might start buying them if they do trade for Marc Gasol. I'm just giving you a fair warning.
That's fine. I'll start buying if they trade for Paul George, which is why we're both going to buy in when they trade for them both. Hashtag soon.
Now, important question, Carter.
Hit me.
If those guys get added to the Cavaliers, do you think that they would still be a smart selection on many nights on draft.com?
Yeah, because what's so nice about draft is, you know, you're not going to have the same people picking the same guys. So you still have to kind of pick your spot, especially if you're in a deep league and the Cavs are a matchup based team. So like, you're going to have to pick your spots on who's going to go off on a given night. But yeah, I think they're still going to have value. And plus, like, you have much better chances of winning on draft.com if you're picking the right guys.
Right. Actually, your chances of winning at draft.com are actually 80% higher than the other guys.
Wow.
Plus, you basically have no risk at all if you want to try out draft.com, because not only do you get a free game when you use promo code THECHASEDOWN, all one word, THECHASEDOWN, but Draft will also refund you up to $100 if you don't love your experience.
Which you're not going to not love it, because it's a very easy thing. You can get a draft done in like 2 to 3 minutes most times. You don't have all the sharps that are flooding the contest with 37 lineups apiece, where you only
no,
have
there's
one
no spreadsheet not, nerds that have figured yeah. out the value for every single player on every given night. It's straight up, what are the matchups? Do you know basketball? Let's make this happen.
It's a really fun site. And once again, you can sign up using promo code THECHASEDOWN. You'll support the pod, which, you know, Justin and I are just trying to get that paper, baby. That's pretty much all we are at this point.
Yeah, and total sellout. And I understand that there's a lot of other podcasts using Draft. They all got their own promo codes and stuff, and maybe you've used one. But here's what you can do.
Secondary,
you know how easy
email
it is?
Account, baby.
Do you know how easy it is to create another email account? Just, you know what? Another free game. It's another chance to win cold, hard cash. Let's cook the numbers. Let's make this work. If you also want to help us out, you can unsubscribe and subscribe back and forth a bunch of times on iTunes. Let's cook the books. Let's support the podcast. Because you guys have done such a great job of supporting the podcast on Twitter. Let's make it be heard by supporting our sponsors.
That would be very nice, and we would appreciate it. And please leave us a review on iTunes if you're willing.
Now, before we just like completely devolve into being plugs, we might as well wrap this up. You think that's a good idea?
I think that's fair.
All right, that's great. All right, well, for myself, Justin Rowan, and my co-host, Carter Rodriguez, I want to thank everyone for listening. Remember to check out all the other shows on Leverage the Chat, whether it be Talk Hoops, new pod, is it Sharpen Your Knives?
It's Pack Your
Pack
Knives.
Pack Your Knives. Pack Your Knives.
I think that's what pack they tell the contestants when they get sent home.
Pack Your Knives with Tom Haberstrong, Kevin Arnovitz, new podcast where they basically analyze Top Chef the same way that us nerds analyze basketball. Was Speaks is tremendous. Light Years, of course, TBF, BOMM.
Shout out Was Speaks because it had Cleveland native part of Cavs Twitter, Beth Gooden, on their recent episode, and it was amazing. She talked about Why I Stayed movement. Some really heavy stuff, but then they also had some good Cleveland banter. Have to check out that one. That's like my unabashed pod rec for the week.
That was very, very, very powerful, and I recommend anybody listen. Also, Nice Kicks, Sword History. I'm definitely forgetting others, but that's fine. You know what? Just go to leveragethechat.com, check out the feeds there, subscribe, tell your friends, and as always, thank you guys for your support, and go Cavs. We'll be right back.